the Station of the Stars. RTI.
EW to his friends, Eric Wiltshire.
Welcome to Postcard from Pop Brad on a gloriously sunny day with all the snow-covered mountains still. My name's Eric Wiltshire, at the base of the Tatry Mountains out here in East Slovakia, which is why it's called Postcard from Pop Brad, because we're in Pop Brad. On the zit of the nose of Europe, it is none other than my cohort, Lee Banks.
Hello, yes, ladies and gentlemen, now known as Captain Red Top, after a discussion me and Mr. Eric have been having this morning that proves that I was right 2 years ago remain right about newspapers taking over the cyber world.
Yeah, right. And in Gay Parry, probably because it's warming up, the smell of the doo-doo is going to be increasing. It's the co-founder of the consumer action group, Mark Gander.
Yes, well, hello there. It's certainly getting warm, although it's pretty grey. But the great thing is that my coriander is starting to make little sprouts. I have a window box. Everybody else here has those. What are those red things that they have? I forgot. Oh, geraniums. Everybody else has geraniums, but I have coriander.
Oh no, I've got window boxes with herby things in it. Is that English? Do you think?
God, can you hear them, ladies and gentlemen? It's like a mother's unit.
Anyway, hi to the guys at Talk Radio, X Replay Radio, you wonderful folks on Audio Boo walking down the road listening to us, and of course, the loyal people on RTI. Actually, I've got a little present for local RTI people soon. Really, really, really into Dave's show. And I'm looking at it right now, but you've got to come to the studios to grab one. But it will be nice. So there you go. This is the alternative news show, as we say, where we look at some of the stories that maybe aren't discussed in depth around the planet. Lee starts off with his usual obituary to everybody, which is a really positive way to start a programme.
It is. Talk about the dead.
Yes.
Poor old Vidal Sassoon, eh?
Yeah.
There he is. He's shuffled off the mortal coil. Left his mullet behind.
No, Vidal the Bob Sassoon.
He was the Bobcat, wasn't he? Of course he was, yes. But he also, my ex-wife, who actually worked for him, mm-hmm. Was one of the, what's those things that come first? Anyway, she was a pioneer of the mullet. Used to keep it in the bath, she said.
Right.
Yes.
And he shuffled off the mortal coil. Poor old Vidal.
Well, at least that's one good start to the programme, because at least it's one person I know.
What? You know who? Did you know him? Did you meet him?
I've met Mr. Sassoon, and I actually knew his name, which is very unusual in our obituary section, because most of the time I don't know anybody.
That's because you're a Philistine. You're a Philistine of the dead.
Now he's gone. You don't know anybody.
No.
That's it. No. Don't know anybody.
I only know you two.
Yeah. And it's only bald, so it didn't matter.
Hey?
Yeah.
Excuse me?
I never spoke. That was Mark. Mark said that.
A gentleman called David Kelly has died.
You must know who David Kelly was,
No, I don't.
Yeah, very thin little...
Weedy chap.
Weasley sort of guy, but absolutely great, really. And he played that wonderful role in... Charlie Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, starring
I'm not helping you, see, you just stole it off me.
Yeah, well, he's starring the Buccaneer of the Caribbean, the Pirate of the Caribbean.
No, so allow Mark to say Buccaneer and Wonka on the show's really date.
anyway, no, it was great.
He was the man who rode naked in the 1998 film Waking Ned, which I watched on a jumbo jet going across to America.
What's Waking Ned?
Waking Ned, that's when you wake up next to your boyfriend, Eric, and you say, "Hello, darling," and he wakes up and smiles at you sweetly. That's called Waking Ned. It's a film!
Okay. Well, I didn't know!
Everybody knows it was that beautiful film based in Ireland, where they won this village won the lottery. I think they won the lottery anyway, or was it that they had a... Anyway, they were, and he rode around on a motorbike naked.
That's
his claim to fame, and he's died. You should be sad. And what about Botany Bay star Patricia Medina?
Poor
old 92 years old as well, just amazing.
Yeah, just about your age, Eric. Yeah, she was in Orson Welles' Mr. Akkadin. Yeah?
What?
In Botany Bay with Alan Ladd. Alan Ladd, that great diminutive alcoholic. That tall alcoholic.
Wasn't he in that American war thing?
Who, Alan Ladd?
Yeah.
He was the man who always carried a box so he could stand on it so he could kiss his leading lady.
I thought he was on, what was that program called on telly, where it was a field hospital with the Americans?
No, that's Alan Alder.
Oh, is it Alan Alder?
No, this is Alan Ladd, the little diminutive one. He was in The Adventurers. Harold Robbins film, the Adventurers he played, I've forgotten. He said Nevada Smith. He played Nevada Smith in it.
Right.
Anyway, she was actually married, you must know, to Joseph Cotton.
Is that a relation to Billy Cotton?
Yeah, he invented the buds. No.
I don't know. I really don't. Honestly, I don't know.
An alcoholic.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Have you heard of Orson Welles?
Yes, he wrote books.
No, he didn't.
Oh, right.
That was H.G. Wells.
Oh, was it? Okay.
No! She was in Citizen Kane with Orson Welles, one of the most famous films about a newspaper pioneer, another red-top god like me.
Do you know what you remind me of? When you go no like that, you remind me of Frankie Howard.
Oh, no.
Couldn't do it!
No!
What was that song you did?
I don't know.
About the fish.
I don't know.
Swam right over the dam.
Was it him?
Right.
Let's get on with something that people might know about.
I'm glad we showed a lot of respect to the dead then.
Yes. In the terms of 2012 programming, Top Gear, yippity-doo, wins the major international award. That would really stuff it up the nose of some silly old what's-its, at the Rose d'Or Festival in Lucerne. How do you do that in French, Mark?
I don't know how to pronounce it in German, actually. Luzern.
Oh, right.
Luzern. It's one of these bilingual towns. I think it's actually... Luzern itself, I think, is a German town.
Oh, right, okay.
Speak German.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sie sprechen Deutsch, ja.
Apparently.
Ich spreche in Deutsch. Du bist mein kleiner Kartoffel. Du bist mein Spiegelgesicht.
Yeah, actually, it's true, Mark. I heard him trying to talk German one night in a bar.
Saying you're a little potato.
In a bar in Slovakia. And the German guy he was talking to couldn't understand a word of it because he was too drunk.
The German guy was, or I was?
You was.
Ich war sehr getrunken.
What?
I apologize
to everybody in Germany. Yes, anyway, apparently 7 million cars have been destroyed to win the award, joked Mr. Clarkson as he collected the award, an honorary prize for the global appeal of Top Gear. This is the best job in the world, and I hope I can do it forever. It's not going to happen, Jeremy, you're going to die, he added. And
carry on, I interrupted then, that was rude of me.
What were you going to say? Is that the only program he's ever done?
No, not at all. I was going to say there's only one thing that really annoys me about Top Gear.
What?
They've stolen their format, Offals.
I think they might have something to say about that.
The winners were apparently chosen by a panel of 10 jurors, but they don't say if it was a unanimous verdict. I've got a suspicion it might have been a majority just. It's a good programme, but I have to say that I think they need to be a little bit more careful, and I thought that their comments about India and so forth were a bit out of order.
A lot of people
did. They never made any comments about India.
They did make comments about India.
Not really. All they did was the loser sign on their head. On his head, and appear at a trade mission with no trousers on. What's wrong with that? The Indians, they've got a great sense of humour. They thought it was funny. They put on with me for months.
Well, that's true. And what they don't realise is how much free PR they got out of it, Mark.
Absolutely.
Indian.
Yes.
You think they need free PR? You think without Top Gear, nobody knows where India is?
No, but I think it's a way No, seriously.
Well, there's a place called India. I didn't know that before. I listened to the Cockney Girl last night. Dear me. How many people? Oh, only a billion.
There's a billion watching. Anyway, this just, words fail me. It beggars belief. An undercover agent, the guy who was, who foiled the Al-Qaeda bomb plot on that plane thing recently, has been exposed as a British double agent. Yeah. Well, how stupid are people to actually release this information that he was a British citizen?
I don't understand this
completely agree. And in fact, I think the news is, you know, originally it's all the news about the bomb and the frustration of the bomb attempt. But now I think that now this is what's being said now. What on earth's going on? All this stuff is being released. You know, it just seems crazy. I mean, here's certainly one double agent who's out of a job. I suppose we're queuing behind him at the Labour Exchange.
Yeah, but worse still,
women double agent
coalition next year.
Yeah, but worse still, it's now going to cost a fortune to keep this bloke safe, and his family, and siblings and everybody else, just because one news organisation says, you know, it was a British citizen.
Oi! What? Oi! This is nothing to do with any news organisation at all. This is to do with Washington, some idiotic person in Washington, some spy, disenfranchised spy over there, who thought he would tell the world that that this bloke was a British citizen. It wasn't the news organisation. It was out in the public forum when the news organisation broke the story. They didn't find it out. It was the spies themselves who dropped this bloke in it for some inexplicable reason. This is not normal practice to reveal any information about a spy who is working alongside you from a different country. The spies that knew him did it.
Possibly. Don't know.
It's the truth.
Well,
I
don't necessarily believe anything. But I have to say that whoever gets found out for that, well, I know what I do to them, and it's not very pleasant.
Something in their underpants, wouldn't you?
I would indeed. stop it. Mark, JP Morgan reveals $2 billion trading loss.
Yes, yeah. I've only just started to come across this story, actually, so I don't have a lot to say with it. But, you know, what an astonishing amount of money to lose. But, you know, I wonder whether, you know, this is all sort of made up of, quite often you hear about these trading losses. And in fact, you find that there's sort of rationalization of accounts here and there and so forth. And of course, you know, these losses are sometimes declared because then it allows them to get tax breaks and so forth. I haven't really read enough about it to know all the details.
Actually, I have read enough about it. Because I'm a good boy. Right. And I can tell you
just make a note of this? This is May 2012, boys and girls.
Yeah, Lee's a good boy. Captain Redtop is a good boy.
Go on. Right.
And what actually happened was there was a lot of risky hedging strategy going on, and some bloke, whose name has now escaped me, but I think he was in Denmark, right, was playing the market so desperately and so wildly that people started to watch him. And that's where this loss started to accumulate. Mm. And as Chief Executive Jamie Dimon says, it was errors, sloppiness and bad judgment that did it. Well, how can they get away with errors, bad judgment and sloppiness after all the trouble that they've done, not this bank particularly, but the whole banking industry, brought the world to its knees, dear, have nearly destroyed the euro. The euro is about to die because of these pillocks, if I may be so bold as you to use your word, Eric.
Thank you.
Without getting in trouble.
You're not.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Next. Yeah, but what annoys me is, then, because one bank makes a mistake, Goldman Sachs, Citigroup, Bank of America, Barclays, Deutsche Bank, BNP, they all go suffering because of one lunatic.
I think that then goes back to what Mark was saying. I think that's a bit of jumping on the bandwagon.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, a good time to bury bad news. Where did that come from? I seem to remember.
Yes.
You know, why not, you know, lump it all in? Better than sort of standing out on your own and saying, well, you know, we made this huge loss and so forth. You might as well jump in with your mates and say, you know, it tends to get lost, doesn't it?
Yeah, so what you're basically saying is bankers are politicians.
Exactly. I couldn't agree more. Well put.
Mm. Prince Charles had a go at reading the weather.
It was very funny.
And it was really, really good. If you haven't seen it, get yourself onto YouTube and watch it. It was brilliant.
And pay attention to which version you
exactly,
you get.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And if anybody says Prince Charles is stuffy after doing that, then you're on the wrong planet.
Yeah. May I say that it was obvious, though, that Prince Charles was praying for the end to the longest reign in Britain.
Ooh, but I thought he did a good job.
He did. Yeah. It was funny and it was nice and it was human. Yeah.
But who was it who just decided to take the word hell out of it? Because in one version he says, who the hell wrote the script? And then later on it changed to sort of something like, who the... It almost sounded like who on earth wrote the script.
A bit prissy, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But there again, I thought he did an amazing job, because having tried to do that myself, I know how difficult it is.
Well, I can tell you what. I mean, you know, people may not like the monarchy and this sort of thing, but I think that kind of thing is very nice. And I can't imagine the French monarchy, president, you know, they are so up themselves. I can't imagine that they would ever want to get involved in that kind of thing. They just think it's not what we do.
Oh, right. Have you had an invite from the new president yet?
I tore it up. I said no.
Yeah.
I like it. One for Lee. British gas owners. Centrica. Warns of a higher energy bill. This is where we get Frankie Howard out again. Because apparently gas could be as much as 15% higher next year.
Well, it could. And ladies and gentlemen, I have to point out that the reason he's given this story to me to do is because he knows damn well that I didn't read this story before we came on air. And he's just chucked it at me to embarrass me. But as the true trooper of the Red Tops, Captain Red Top will have a go and make it work. Centrica, the owner of British Gas, how disgusting are these? And one hand they give us and the other hand they take away. Electricity prices are down because of them, so they brag. And surreptitiously they're taking in all back offers. And the price of gas, 15% higher for the winter, ladies.
Yeah, but
and
I'm not
gentlemen.
Sure that the prices went down at all. I mean, I think that the prices have been up. They did just declared, wasn't it, last year, 18% rise. It might have come down just for a little moment, then went back up again.
5% in its standard electricity tariff. Even when I don't read the stories, I know more than you.
Oh, and I can tell you what, on the Consumer Action Group, because we've got a utilities sub-forum where people come along and tell us all the things that are happening with all the energy suppliers around the country, and I can tell you that the prime offender all the time is British Gas, British Gas, yeah. British Gas. Mistakes, overcharging. There's an amazing thing where apparently people who are not in England may not know that we have two rates. There's a nighttime rate called the economy rate and a daytime rate. Right. And the meter, normally speaking, the top set of figures is the daytime rate, and the bottom set of figures is the cheaper one. But we then discovered that a lot of British gas engineers have wired them the wrong way round. And you couldn't make it up, could you? Believe me, it's absolutely true. And we were told this by some British gas whistleblowers who came along onto the site and told us about it. We then discovered it's true. And even though you can go to British Gas and complain about it, they will still drag their heels in and try not to do anything about it. Mm. Unbelievable. British Gas, my goodness, what a disaster.
Well, can I put one to you, Mark, then, that you might have an answer to here? Right. Sure. People who have a prepayment meter, I have always believed, paid extra for their electricity.
British Gas
deny it, say that everybody pays the same. I think that somebody's got their wires crossed there.
Well,
if you've got that in writing, please let me have it, because I will put it on the forum and I'm sure we will find out the truth in a very short time.
That'd be interesting to do. Mm. What I'll do, I shall send you an email and we'll see what happens and we can perhaps report back on it next
Absolutely.
Week.
Absolutely. I think it is Porky's from British Gas. British Gas, quite frankly, I don't think anybody should go to British Gas. I think they're too big. They're too big. They've been around too long. And they're a privatised entity with a nationalised attitude now. very nasty bunch.
Okay, talking of coming back to things, I have to say thank you to so many of you who followed up on our piece last week about the Voice of America. And I do have to apologise for the fact that I haven't had time to put all the addresses on the website. But those of you that have emailed studio@rtifm.com, we will forward those emails to Helly Dale for you. And we will put the entire list of places where you can write to explain to the American people in power that killing English from the Voice of America is about as stupid as asking me to do brain surgery, because it is downright stupid. Moving along, the country's top school inspector says he wants children banned from taking their phones into school. And I can I can tell you that in Slovakia, a child can take the mobile to and from school, but they have to turn it off as they get in to school and can only turn it on again when they come out.
That makes sense for security and safety reasons.
Yes.
And my kids too in France, exactly the same rule. Yes. I think it's very sensible.
Sir Michael Wilshaw, you're a knob.
Why?
We're saying that they can't take it to and from.
Okay.
No, that's without a K. That is a colloquial knob, as is known in Mancunian circles, as a knob without a K.
Right, well,
that kind of knob. If he has to have a blanket ban on telephones, it means that they haven't got the wit or the will to introduce the right kind of discipline in schools. You know, I think that a lot of children now, especially with all the dangers in this sort of thing, and their children maybe find their own way home and they want to have contact with their kids. I certainly do.
Exactly.
And I'd be appalled if my kids weren't allowed to have, or at least my son wasn't allowed to have his telephone in school. I think it's just downright laziness.
Well, I was going to put this out to the audience a bit, because it is a bit of a contentious issue. Do you think it's right and proper to ban the children taking them to school and leaving their mobile phones at home? Do you think it's up to the teachers to control? And the other question I'll pose, because of the way phones are these days, you know, often we will get comments from people talking about teachers who say to students, Google it. Now, we know it's wrong to Google it. We understand all that, so I'm not going there. But
it's even worse than Wikipedia, right?
No. But the point is, you know, smartphones today, even the smaller little handheld ones, they have calculators on them, they have all sorts of stuff that kids can take into school. Now, why would you go and buy a calculator when you've got one sitting on your phone already?
Well, I wouldn't let my kids use a calculator anyway.
Phone into school.
I don't think you should be allowed to take calculators into school.
No, you shouldn't. I wasn't allowed to take my transistor radio in.
Ah, yes, that reminds me.
So it's got to do with calculators.
Well, yes, I know. I kind of see where Lee's coming from, because I do remember one occurrence where a rather large gentleman, and I use the term gentleman, was at school. He was in the fifth year, I think, and all I can say is he could make mincemeat of David Hay. And during one assembly, he always used to carry a radio under his coat, but it came on automatically, and all the headmaster said was, I hope you got a licence for that. And that was the end of it.
Because he was scared of him?
Oh, yeah, everybody was.
That's what people were of me. I was the cock of the school.
What, you mean the big knob? You the knob?
Is that with a K? Cock with a K, is that?
Yes.
No, that's cock with a C. Yeah. That's cock with a C. In Mancunian fighting circles, it's cock with a C.
Yeah. Anyway, staying with phones as we get towards the end of part one. EU sanctions. By the way, sorry, just going back to that. Let us know what you think. Get hold of your own station or studio RTIFM. Should it be a blanket ban on kids taking phones into schools? We know in other areas of the world certain phones are banned. Certainly if you go into the Middle East, the opportunity to have your photo phone taken away from you is very, 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 very prolific. Should we let the kids take these phones in? Or are these two on the other side of the pond but being boring old people not keeping up with modern technology?
And should they be banned from taking in the blankets as well?
Well, don't forget, you listeners at home, the nice man, Mark, he wants the children to be able to take the phones in, but just switched off. The nasty man, Lee. He wants the children to have no fun, nothing, no, yeah. never.
No, right. EU sanctions cheaper mobile phone calls within Europe. Yippee!
Yes. They keep doing this story every time it comes up.
No, that was roaming, dear boy. That was the roaming directive.
In the gloaming.
That was the roaming directive. This one's also about... What? Yeah.
We're not talking about roaming hands or anything here. You know,
roaming phones. That was a 1921 song. By, I forgot his name, but it was a beautiful song. I'll take you roaming in the gloaming.
I'm not that old, thank you very much. But under new regulations, customers can choose a different operator with more attractive travel rates before leaving without changing their number. Is that going to make any difference?
Yes, it is, because it means that it's going to be more attractive then for providers, not only to provide a worthwhile domestic service, but also an international service if they want to make sure they've still got their clients on both levels. So at the end of the day, forcing them to have more products means more competition. Jolly good.
Well, the only thing I would add to that, knowing how good Lee's phone isn't... No. I'm not.
Ladies and gentlemen, he's doing it again.
I'm not chastising you. I'm chastising the transmission into where you live.
Sorry. Yes.
If you are travelling to the UK, don't expect your mobile to work like it does on mainland Europe.
Oh.
Because it doesn't. It doesn't. Disaster. How good is your phone, Lee?
My phone is. I'm trying to think of another Mancunian word that begins with C and ends with P, but I'm not saying it. It is absolutely of that ilk over here, because I have to go and stand out in the rain in the summer to talk to you. How far away are you? 2,000 miles away. That's not
2,000 kilometres away.
Not far for a phone to be able to work that, is it? And I have to stand in the rain to do it. I cannot make a phone call from inside my 300-year-old cottage in the middle of nowhere.
It's terrible, isn't it?
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, absolute lunacy. And then they want...
I don't get a cheaper rate for it. It doesn't, like, cost me less because I can't use it. I can pay the same as everybody else.
Oh, well. Anyway, the good news is these new charges will come into effect from the 1st of July within the EU. Calls will be capped at 29 cents, EU cents, which is 23p per minute plus...
Which is still a shed load of money, by the way, plus VAT. Mm. So you add 20% on top of that, that's another 2.35p on top of that, that's 28p a minute. It's a huge amount of money when you consider the network's already there.
Yeah, but who's going to pay for the upgrade when it needs fixing?
Well, we will, of course. You know, we always pay for everything.
Well, exactly.
What, you will?
Well, we all do it.
The EU reckons that for a typical businessman or woman traveller, it could save as much as €1,000 a year.
Oh, well, that's a lot of money, isn't it?
Well, no, that's a good thing.
That'll buy you 3 pints
a lot. It is a good thing.
So, are you still being a red top?
Why, what have we done now? No, I'm just
well, no, I think that's a good saving. €1,000.
€1,000, that's 750 quid a week. That's how much is that? That's £5 a week. Not even that.
That's good.
No, it's €5 a week.
Yeah.
€5 a week. Then? That's what I said, a pint of lager.
Oh. Anyway, just a quick competition for local people in Poprad now as we get to the end.
€20 a week. €20 a week.
€20, yeah.
I've 3 pints of lager, like I said, in the first place.
I might have to do my competition in part two.
I want to tell you something about Poprad before we go.
Well, you can't, because I've only got 10 seconds left, and otherwise we'll get cut off. It's as simple as that.
10 seconds.
Right, go.
Me?
Yeah.
There are three young ladies for Rebecca.
From the heart of the earth to the world, RTI.
Eric, give me a break.